What's up, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the Fast Friday podcast on Sikkim365.com. I am Craig Smoke, Sikkim365.com team reporter, also host of UNR weekdays 12 to 3 on ESPN Central Texas, and joined as always by Grayson Grundhafer, director of broadcasting, also team and recruiting reporter for Sikkim365.com. And Grayson, how are we doing this week, man?
Doing good, just cruising right along during the off season, following a lot of basketball, and baseball starts up this weekend, and just kind of enjoying some of these spring sports that maybe don't get as much love as, you know, some of the fall sports do. But it's been a good week, and just kind of moving right along with, you know, different recruiting and football type news, but mainly focusing on the spring sports now.
Yeah, it's baseball now getting underway. Basketball obviously has been underway for a few weeks now, and basketball about to get really hot and heavy. Baseball obviously with some pretty big expectations entering this season. We'll talk about both of those sports on the podcast today, and quite frankly, we'll get into your mailbag questions as well to close things out as we normally do, but not a really heavy news week other than just the teams that are in action right now, or in the case of baseball, about to launch their seasons. Football-wise, pretty quiet. Not a whole lot out there, which is, quite frankly, a good thing. There really shouldn't be too much out there in a week like this where you're right square between signing day number two and then spring workouts actually starting up. We do have an idea, though, now of spring dates, and I'll get to that in just a moment. But if there was a piece of news coming out of Baylor football so far this week, then it was definitely the roster being released for the spring, the 2019 updated roster. And I know that many took note of some of the weights that were reported and what differences there were from last year, but also noticeable was two subtractions from that roster. One that was pretty much expected, and one that was, well, I guess expected as well, just didn't really know what avenue it was eventually going to lead down. And that was, in one case, Pooh Strickland, junior wide receiver, senior to be from Midway High School. He decided to hang it up the cleats and go ahead and call it a career. He will not play his final season of eligibility at Baylor. And he was actually on You Make the Call the day that that news broke, and just said that he wants to get into coaching, that at one point this year, it was during the Oklahoma State game, he was on the sidelines, he was watching Frisman Jackson do his thing, and just kind of, you know, seeing it from a different viewpoint, and decided that, you know, coaching is going to be where his heart goes next and where he goes next in life. But, you know, he had a lot of injuries that he dealt with, Grayson, back injury especially, that had him in and out. And that was really the tale of his entire Baylor career, was these moments where you go, oh, wow, he's got such great potential. But then also maybe a game where he had a few drops, or, as was the case probably far too often, games where he wasn't available because of said injuries. So after what was probably his most solid year, I would say, this past season, he is now going to go into the coaching ranks, and maybe he'll end up on the Baylor staff one day down the line. But while not a backbreaker for this team and this roster, certainly a guy that I had high hopes for, and this wide receiving crew that has a lot of experience, but also is somewhat young, and will be replacing, you know, the production of a Jalen Hurd and now a Pooh Strickland. That would have been a nice guy to have in your ranks next year, just a reliable veteran player. And so now, even more so than it even was like a week or so ago, you need those Jared Atkinsons and the rest of those guys who have maybe shown a little but not shown a ton to now step up and fill voids like the one that Pooh will be leaving.
Yeah, and it's tough to lose a senior leader like that. Pooh's a guy that I think he's a good teammate, and I think he's one that if he was healthy and if he was right, I think he would be a guy that could have made an impact this season. But, you know, you kind of hit on it. They have a lot of young guys, but I think the biggest part about this is it provides more opportunities for those young guys to maybe develop into that role a little bit quicker. And I think that's a good thing. You know, you got guys like R.J. Sneed, Jared Atkinson, who have been waiting in the wings. You got Jackson Gleason, you know, a young guy that we haven't even gotten to see yet play, see what he can do. And I think you're going to get to see a lot more of them. And, of course, you're going to have the steady guys that we saw last year with Josh Fleeks, Tyquan Thornton, and then, of course, Denzel Mims. And how important does this make Chris Platt coming back, though? You still have a senior leader in that group along with Denzel Mims. You still have a veteran there. And I think it just magnifies him coming back even more, and that's pretty big, I think.
Yeah, I almost forget that Chris Platt's coming back in a way. I just kind of, it was a big note at the time, but yeah, I have to keep kind of reminding myself that he will in fact be back. So yeah, it's huge, and I think next year you're not only looking for your veterans like the Platts and the Mimses to do what they've always done. And in the case of, I think, both of them, quite frankly, expect them to do much more than they've already done. It'll be the final go-round for both those players, so you expect big years. But yeah, a lot of unproven young talent, although Barnes and Fleeks and Thornton, you all feel really good about each of those guys. And then there's a lot more of the unproven, and Gleason is certainly a part of that group as well. Jared Atkinson kind of, I don't know, I'd say he's not a young guy, but he's in the same category as like Tyquan and those types of players. So yeah, Pooh was solid, man. He had a great game against Texas, I remember, this past season, and had some other big catches along the way, at times where you kind of, quite frankly, forgot about him. Like, all of a sudden, there's Pooh with a first down catch. There's, you know, his big catch. And so, not a backbreaker by any means, but just unfortunate that he couldn't have been a part of this last ride. But it does also, at the same time, free up another scholarship. And I know that people have been eyeing that closely, the numbers on the scholarships and what kind of attrition needs to take place. So we knew there would be some attrition. He certainly, with his injury, seems like a good candidate, and he is, in fact, one of those victims of attrition. So one more scholarship closer to getting back to 85. Still a couple of more players, 2 to 3 more players, will have to make that call. But another name that frees up a scholarship, and I think we kind of took this one into account already, just haven't or hadn't still received really any final word, but the hints are sure there. Eliasa Anderson, not on the updated spring roster. So Pooh's not on there. Why is Pooh not on there? Okay, Pooh's decided to retire from football. Makes sense. Eliasa Anderson's not on there. Why is Eliasa not on there? Well, we've already talked about and we've known now for a few weeks that he had apparently entered his name in the transfer portal. Don't know what exactly his mindset is as far as wanting to look outside of Baylor and go already have to go sit out a year somewhere else after making less than a handful of starts, but that's where his mind appears to be. And quite frankly, not seeing him on that roster, Grayson, I know we've heard that he's not even enrolled. You know, he's in the portal, as I mentioned. So, I mean, I'm putting no stock in really believing that he's going to be back with this football team. And I guess there's always that chance, but him not being around for spring, even though Jared Atkinson technically did that last year, he's also dealing with his sick mother, who's doing much better these days, thank the Lord. But with Eliasa, it just seems like the fit's no longer there. So there's another scholarship that's opened up.
Yeah, and I haven't heard of, you know, an extenuating circumstance as to why he's gone. You know, obviously Jared had, you know, a very tough situation. That's the reason why he was gone. But Eliasa, we don't know exactly what it is, but I have a feeling that he might have just gotten passed up, honestly, on the depth chart. And that's hard to take in when you were a guy that played. Mm-hmm. He played and he did pretty well in his time, but I think ultimately he was going to end up being a guard. I just think that the young guys on the roster at tackle, such as Casey Phillips and Connor Galvin, were just going to be more ideal for what this offense wanted, and maybe that was a negative for him, and definitely could have been. And so you know, it is what it is. You're going to have attrition every single year, and I think people are starting to accept that more. But Baylor is building enough depth that they can handle that and handle those kind of losses. And, you know, one name that got flipped from the defensive side back to the offensive side was Khalil Keith. And maybe there's a reason for it. You know, with Eliasa gone, maybe that's another reason why he flipped back over to the offensive side. But, I think when you look at this roster, there's no doubt that the offensive line has gotten bigger and stronger, I would assume. And so, you know, you're going to replace a guy like Eliasa with another 300-pounder and just try to move right along. They finally have the depth where they can, I think, feel comfortable with that.
Yeah, that depth was just so non-existent their first year here. You know, that 1-11 season, not much went right in any way, shape, or form, but especially that O-line was just so beaten up and so beaten up by numbers. And this last year, I think we did not see anywhere near the improvement that we need to see eventually. Like, I mean, I've seen, you know, predictions of 8-9 wins next year. I think I've gone on record already as saying that about 8-5 is what I would expect. I don't expect some like 2-3 game improvement on 7 wins. I think that'd be kind of crazy. But that O-line's got to be much, much better. And It's year three, so at some point you're going to expect it. It just should be better. How much of an improvement can they make? Well, it's a lot of moving pieces and a lot of guys who are no longer in the lineup that used to be. And, in the case of Eliasa, if he's getting passed up because of the competition level or whatever the case may be, but if it is that, then I think that's only good news, because if you're seeing the writing on the wall and some dude who's not been around as long as you have and you've only been around for 2 years is already passing you up, then you know what? Then that scholarship could be better utilized somewhere else. And he was a nice get, but that whole 2017 class was just almost celebrated because they were bodies. And we've seen now the massive amount of attrition. We've talked at length before about like why that could almost or should almost have been expected because of the short recruitment cycles for those players and this coaching staff. But he's not one I necessarily pegged on leaving at this point, this early on. So it's a bit surprising, but everyone has their reasons. And you know what? That's a scholarship that they needed to have anyway. So it'll come from Eliasa Anderson.
Yeah, and I agree with you. It's a big surprise in regard to he got to play.
Yeah.
As a redshirt freshman.
Got to make a couple starts last year.
Yeah, exactly. So you would think that it would be something other than that, but you just never know. In college football now with this transfer portal, things have definitely changed. Mm-hmm. And so I think we're going to continue to see that, and you're going to continue to see, four or five guys every year leave. And I just think that's the way it is at every program now, and something that, fans are just going to have to get used to.
Yep, so I think Colt last updated it. There are like 87 scholarships mm-hmm. now, so there's still a couple of more that will have to be figured out, and that could come by way of attrition. That could come from like a medical red shirt for someone. That could come from, taking the scholarship away from a walk-on. Maybe you gave it to last year and then, using it elsewhere or not having it available. So I'm sure they're figuring all of those things out, because they are on somewhat of a timetable to get to 85. But you at least got a couple of them cleared up this week. And we know it's not going to be a long wait until football spring practices get back underway, even though Baylor itself has not sent out anything so far in regards to the green and gold game, at least that I've seen, or spring practices really for that matter. I saw a graphic late last week. Midway Football has their own recruiting account where they just kind of keep you updated on their players and their recruitments. And obviously with signing day here recently, they had a bunch of graphics of like James Fulbright and whatnot. But one graphic that they tweeted out was a Baylor football spring schedule. And I did a double take. I was like, I haven't seen that before, but it's 2019 spring. It lines up with the calendar. It lines up with what Matt Rhule said at his signing day press conference as well, about doing a couple of practices that first week and then taking the next week for spring break and then coming back and doing the rest of it. And based off this calendar, that's exactly what they'll do. They'll have a 3-day mini camp starting the first week of March on Tuesday the 5th. They'll practice that 5th, 6th, 7th, Tuesday through Thursday. Then they'll have like 9-10 days off for spring break. They'll come back on the 19th, get in practice number 4, and then for the next 4 weeks they'll just do 3 practices a week on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays. So 3-day mini camp first week of March, spring break the next week, and then 3 practices each week for the next month, lasting up until the green and gold game on April the 13th. So a good month and a half of practices sprinkled in there, and just exciting to see that. Exciting to see that we kind of now have a date to recognize and get ready for. And, well, you look up at the calendar, and we're halfway through February, so we're only a couple of weeks away, about 3 weeks away from practice number 1 of the spring, which is kind of hard to believe. But I did get a little excited, and not only seeing that calendar, because that means media sessions and good tweets coming your way, and obviously recaps and whatnot to the site, and also discussion, of course, as well. But I saw some of the workout videos that Baylor's been posting up, and they did a little collage today. And one of the guys I saw on there with the 903 tattoo just blazing on his leg was Blake Lynch. And I mean, Blake Lynch has always had some pretty good size, but he looks, I mean, unless my eyes are just deceiving me, like he's put on some muscle and he looks a little more chiseled. And I couldn't so much tell with a ton of the other guys, because not a ton were pictured, but Blake Lynch certainly looked like he's already this offseason put in some work. And so we'll get to see the likes of him and others, and get to track kind of how different they all look here and not too long, only about 3 weeks, like I said.
Yeah, and the other guy in that graphic that I noticed was looking pretty big as well, and looking, like you said, more chiseled, more, I don't want to say healthy, but more, I don't know, along
filled
those
out.
Lines. Yeah, yeah, filled out to an extent. And that was Terrell Bernard, mm-hmm. who is going to be a guy that they're going to rely on a ton. So Like you said, it's always exciting to go and see these spring practices and kind of get an idea of, you know, what these guys look like now and how much their bodies have changed, because, you know, we got to go see last year and got to see the improvement, and now this year gets even more. And, you know, when you look at the weights that have been posted, it doesn't always tell the whole story, because, you know, you want guys to put on good weight, obviously. And so very excited to go see that. And I think that, you know, the little mini camp will be nice, a nice start. And then, you know, you come back after spring break refreshed, and then it's right back to work. And I think that's a good way to do it. And I think it'll be very beneficial and very cool to go see that and go see a lot of the young guys, see if they've taken steps in the right direction. Cause I think that's, you know, kind of the main thing we look at is all the young guys and seeing, you know, what kind of developments they've made. And so, yeah, I'm very excited about it as well.
Yeah, I mean, the 9 early enrollees will be a part of that mix. Some young guys, the Ashton Logan types that we've seen a little bit or heard a little bit about, but maybe not seen a ton of. It'll now be like, what, their second, third springs. The bodies have started to change. Charlie looked good in the picture that I saw. I couldn't tell too much about, like, if he's put on a bunch of weight or not, but he looked, you know, pretty solid. And Blake was obvious. It looked like he put on a good amount of muscle. He looks like a guy that's now in the role and playing that part. And you would love it if he had still a couple years remaining. But, you know, obviously he showed some strong signs at the end of the season that he was, you know, working out nicely with the position change. And now a very big year ahead of him. And he's part of this senior group that's now got a lead as well. And I know Matt Rhule said right when the season was wrapping up, I think it was right before the bowl game, talking about the junior class had to step up and grab the leadership role with the seniors departing. They did get that extra time, another, you know, month or so with the seniors in the bowl game. But, he's one of the senior leaders now, which is kind of crazy to think about. And that's just right around the corner. So very exciting stuff there. And that's about it football-wise. I mean, there's not a ton of recruiting going on right now. It's basically, what, 2020, 2021, 2022, 2023, and then eventually I think stops, but really just kind of scoping out the new prospects, throwing some offers here and there, but in terms of like heavy activity, kind of in a little bit of a lull stage right now, right?
Yeah, pretty much. The good news is we finally have our first camp coming up this weekend on Sunday in Houston is Under Armour. And so those are always a great chance to go see, you know, what kind of prospects stand out. Go see a lot of the Baylor offers, go talk to a lot of the Baylor offers, and I think we'll have more recruiting coming up soon. But yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, Baylor just finished off 2019 class, so now it's kind of all about just gauging interest and seeing, you know, where guys are leaning, and they're all going on visits right now. So they honestly, half of them don't even know where they're leaning right now because they're, you know, still trying to go figure out how they can go take a visit to, you know, all the schools on their radar. So busy time during the spring. I expect Baylor to have another spring or another junior day type thing coming up fairly soon, maybe in the next weekend or two. And then that'll pretty much be probably the last one. They may have a couple visitors here and there, but I think they'll only have one more kind of junior day event.
What are they looking at as far as numbers early on, or have you taken a look into that yet?
Yeah, I mean, see, I'm a believer that what you look at on the roster right now is not necessarily, well, doesn't tell the whole story.
Saw that last year, yeah.
Yeah.
I signed 25 guys in what was supposed to be a 15-man class.
Right, so I'm sticking with lower 20s. I think they'll be in that area. That's where I'm going to lean towards right now. But they have a lot of needs. I mean, they flat out have a lot of needs that they need to address depth wise. And
they need about 7 linebackers.
That's exactly what I was going to say. The linebacker position is one where they're going to have to get a lot of numbers. They need to get a lot of guys. And, you know, you can take a couple risks, but they need some guys that they feel like could come in and contribute, you know, in their second or third year, I think.
So camp's starting up, Under Armour up first, and there will be many more throughout the spring as well. But that's, you know, that's about what's going on with football at the moment. And, we'll have plenty of football to discuss here in about a month once we'll get those media sessions back going and player interviews and all those types of things. But meanwhile, on the hard court, the Baylor men, after a 2-game skid, able to snap that and get a win this week. And you wondered if they couldn't beat Oklahoma on Monday night, how long that losing streak could potentially go. It would have been up to 3 games, and then you're looking at the possibility that You've got to go to Lubbock and to Ames, and you still got another trip to go see Kansas State. I mean, the schedule down the stretch, pretty brutal for the Bears, other than a meeting with West Virginia and Oklahoma State. The others, all road trips or big opponents. So they'll have Texas Tech on Saturday out in Lubbock, and a game they won't likely be favored in, but they'll at least be coming off of a win and still right there in the thick of things in the Big 12 Conference. But they got that win on Monday night against Oklahoma. We know Oklahoma's not a very good team this year, still reeling from, I think, a combination of things, but really just not having that Trae Young type of guy certainly, I think, makes us all view Oklahoma a bit differently, or a Buddy Hield, or a Blake Griffin, for that matter. That's when they've been their most successful, and they've had that lottery pick type of guy. So, you know, he's been gone for a couple of years now, and their program's just kind of been eh-eh. Well, Monday night, they gave the Bears a handful, and Baylor, very fortunate with Mekhi Mason back in the lineup, but still no King McClure back yet. Very fortunate to go and grab a W at home in front of, you know, what was not a great crowd on a Monday night, or Matt, I know there's all sorts of chatter about that, and I don't really want to focus on that. But in a game there wasn't a ton of excitement around, or a ton of hype, or even an opponent that was all that intriguing, they still got the W, and really just getting the W was highly important for this team.
Yeah, that was an ugly game. There's no doubt about it. And Oklahoma came in, and you could tell they were not having what happened to them in Norman happen again. They were embarrassed on their home court the first time these two teams played. Baylor beat them by 30 in Norman the first time. And OU came out
so badly that there was a lot of people who have covered Oklahoma for a long time saying it was the worst loss they'd ever seen at home.
Yeah, it was really ugly. And OU showed up in this game. And they came in and they had a different mindset. And I don't know that Baylor was ready for that mindset to open the game. And they played extremely physical. And OU kind of took it to Baylor early in that game, and it took Baylor a little bit to settle in and get their feet under them. But OU's a good defensive team. They do that to teams occasionally, but they don't have the talent on the offensive side right now to really keep up with many teams. They kind of have to slow the game down and play really good defense to win a lot of games. And Baylor was able to win this game with only 59 points, which is not a ton for them this year. So, great win. It was a must win for Baylor. If they want to win the Big 12, it was a must win. If they want to make the tournament, to be honest, I think it was a must win. And so, huge win. They were able to get it. Mekhi Mason was only 2 of 14 on the night. He did have a career high in assists, but 2 of 14 on the night, and they still win. No King McClure. You got to say that's a good performance for Baylor, and one they needed, frankly.
Yeah, and just having Mason back in the lineup, even if he wasn't sharpshooting, was still just highly important because of what he can do distributing the ball, as you mentioned, and he just makes them a different team. They've got to pray and cross their fingers that he stays healthy the rest of this way. I was really nervous that he wasn't going to play Monday night, and if he doesn't play Monday night, even without, you know, the poor shooting, probably don't win that game. And then you're looking at 3 in a row that you've lost, and maybe 4 and maybe 5, and that's when tournament talk gets shaky. And right now, just 2 games back of the Big 12 lead, K-State still on top of the conference, followed by Kansas, who even in the worst of years is still right there within striking distance. But we're looking at like a handful of games still remaining, and up next for Baylor is a trip to Lubbock. And, you know, they've proven that they can beat Texas Tech this year, but going to Lubbock is a whole different animal. Chris Beard and company, I remember how salty he was after that game at the Farrell Center. Not so much towards Scott Drew or anything, but just he wasn't happy that night with the performance. And so I got a feeling they're going to be, especially on a weekend, very fired up with a big crowd. They hate Baylor. We know that. And they're also, you know, right there in contention for the Big 12 title. They're 2 games back, just like Baylor is right now. So trying to get a little separation and draw closer to K-State. But a big, tough test coming for the Baylor men on Saturday.
Yeah, and we've seen some stranger things, though. You know, Iowa State losing to TCU in Ames is one of those where you go, what in the world happened? But that's life in the Big 12. And so I do think Baylor has a legit shot at winning at Texas Tech or in Ames. I think they will get one of them.
They've proven really they can win in Ames pretty consistently.
Yeah, I think they'll find a way to get one of those games. I don't know which one. I don't know which one I'm leaning towards yet, but I do think they'll get one. This rest period for Mekhi Mason from, you know, Monday till Saturday is going to be huge. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to see a very different Mekhi Mason on Saturday. Maybe King McClure comes back. It's possible. But even if not, I think they can steal one of these, and that would be huge. that pretty much locks you in the tournament just about. As long as you can take care of the, you know, your home games, you get one of those and you're pretty much a lock in my mind.
That puts you at 8-4 in the Big 12 and having added on a top 25 road win, because that's what you're looking at with these next two ball games on the road, is top 25 opponents.
Right, and then if you beat, you know, West Virginia and Oklahoma State at home, you know, you're at 20 wins now, and you're looking pretty good at being in the tournament, I would say. You also have Texas at home, which is very winnable, in my opinion. It's winnable at home.
It's winnable. It wasn't very winnable in Austin a few days ago. Right. That was not pretty.
Right, but you know how games change when you go on the road and go at home.
Right.
Texas has been much better at home than on the road this season, much like TCU. But, yeah, things are getting pretty crazy at the top. Kansas State lost one of their really good guards, Cartier Diarra, for I don't know how long he's going to be out, but it's out indefinitely. Mm-hmm. So, once again, it opens up the door for all of these teams, but in particular Kansas, to find a way to end up tied for the lead and get a share of the Big 12 for, what, the 16th year in a row or something
The entire existence of the Big 12.
Yeah.
That's kind of how it's always gone. And, it's so funny. Everybody's writing them off already, and they're right there. They're right there. I mean, they're the second team listed still. Through all the problems that they've had, through all the off the court, through the injuries, mysterious time away from the team, whatever, they're still right there. It's unbelievable. And, you know, I get tired of kind of the same old, but I have to give it up to them, because in their worst year is still better than the other nine teams' best years, which is pretty crazy. I could see them getting one of these next two on the road. They're going to have at least an extra day that they haven't really been so accustomed to. They've typically been playing Saturdays and turning right around and playing a lot of Monday games. Monday, great for exposure, getting ESPN, love, but they'll play Tuesday of next week, so they'll have one extra day in there. So you'd think with this long week, wait between games, going Monday through Saturday, then having an extra day in between the following one, that maybe Mason rounds into form health-wise, as McClure does as well, as you mentioned. And this team can just get one of these next two. I don't think anybody's going to expect them to go 2-0 in Ames and Lubbock. But Lubbock, I think, will be the biggest test on Saturday. Just my gut feel for some reason. So far, the Baylor men have continued to exceed expectations, and didn't let that streak last too long in the loss column. And I really do think if they lose to Oklahoma on Monday night, and then, I mean, they'll be expected to lose the next two games, although they could jump up and grab one. You're suddenly looking at the possibility of a five-game losing streak. When you're not getting very much top 25 love, you're starting to get the receiving votes, and that took you, a six-game win streak to even get to that point. So you've built yourself back up, but you're still sort of on that bubble where you're a tournament team today, but you're not quite top 25 level just yet. I think there's still a ways away from that, as losing these two recently will keep them out of the polls for a little while longer. But it could have been so much worse, is my point. So that's how big I think Monday was. And I'm like you. I thought it was a must-win game. As silly as that tag can be applied to games that really don't have anywhere near that level of meaning, I think it definitely had that meaning on Monday night for sure against the Sooners.
Yeah, and you're exactly right. In college basketball, we've seen it time and time again. Things snowball in college basketball, almost like no other, in my opinion. And, it applies on both ends, though. You can have really long losing streaks, and you can also have really long winning streaks. And we saw Baylor have the good snowball effect when they won, six in a row recently. But I agree, if they had lost that Oklahoma game, I would be picking them to lose to Tech and Iowa State, because then you're limping into those games.
The
momentum, the confidence isn't there. But getting that win against Oklahoma, it just feels to me like there's still a significant level of fight in this team, and I do not think they're going to be an easy out for Tech or Iowa State. I think they're going to give them all they can handle. And the only unfortunate part is if they were playing on Monday, it'd be the opportunity for a fourth road win on a Monday in conference play in a row. They've won the last four in a row on Monday night on the road.
Didn't even realize that, but yeah, you're right on that. So yeah, just day apart from being able to make that happen, but certainly a big weekend for Scott Drew and company. And I just hope everybody stays healthy. I think that's just the key to this whole run is can they stay healthy? If they can, then they've got a shot against just about anybody. And maybe, even a Sweet 16 type of team. But without health, then they're just like anybody else. So this weekend will be very telling in regards to who we see play, how long we see them play, if they come out of the weekend healthy, and obviously the quick turnaround and then go to Ames after whatever ends up happening Saturday in Lubbock. Meanwhile, Lady Bears are still number one team in the country, and they're just doing whatever they feel like, quite frankly. I was saying today on my show, my co-host Q's like, you know, the last time I saw them, they just looked a little sloppy. They didn't look all the way focused and la-di-da-di-da. He's like, I don't know if that's a he said, I don't know if that's, you know, just the fact that the regular season's kind of wrapped up already. You got a multiple game lead in the Big 12, although you still have to play Texas again, and you can't really have any letdowns. But it really does seem like a team that, with women's basketball being what it is, you got like eight elite teams, and then you got everybody else. You got eight teams that probably have a real legitimate chance at winning the national title. Yes, you have to go out and still win your conference games, and yes, you can't have a super off night, but you are afforded the luxury of being able to just like kind of fine tune like week after week, and that seems like what the Lady Bears do. You know, they have maybe a game that's not great defensively, or a game where they don't shoot particularly well. They still win those games, and then they get to fine tune it a little bit. So the Lady Bears just doing their thing, and I'm really intrigued by what the end of this season ends up looking like for Kim Mulkey and company, because it seems like it's come so easy for them this year. Despite the Stanford loss, the close call against Texas was very dicey, but they still win there in Austin, despite that fourth quarter comeback. I'm very interested to see where they're going to go, where they're going to take this. Is it going to be another getting to the Sweet 16 and then hitting the wall, or is this a team that can legitimately compete, especially in a year where UConn appears to be down for, you know, another national championship appearance? Because that roster sure looks like it's made up of it's a team that's made up to go on a run like that. But as we've seen the last few years, it's a lot easier said than done.
Yeah, the expectation is definitely Final Four for this team. I really, you know, the way they've been able to cruise through this year, they beat UConn already once. I just think that it all sets up for that. It all points to that, and that should be the goal. And a national championship should be on the table for this team. They're plenty developed enough. They're plenty, you know, they have the experience. They have the talent to make that happen. And I agree with you. You know, at some point they are cruising a little bit, I think, and you're going to see that throughout the rest of this year. I think, matter of fact, they play Kansas State tonight. I bet, you know, Kansas State keeps it within 20, which in women's basketball is sometimes considered a close game when you only win by 20 if you have to pull away late or whatnot. But, you know, you look at their schedule, they would have to lose three times to not win the conference outright because they have a three-game lead right now. So, yeah, you're probably going to see them cruise a little bit in these next few weeks. And
Can you only beat somebody down so much? Like, right. I mean, when they've been winning games by 50 and whatnot, I mean, I understand it. I think you saw a good lesson learned against Texas, because they kind of went into that cruise mode against UT, and UT started suddenly shooting the ball really well and suddenly just started playing really well. And that fourth quarter got away and got, you know, like I said, got very dicey. I mean, they very well could have lost that game. That would have been brutally embarrassing loss for them, but it's like they, oh crap. And so I think that was maybe a little bit of a wake-up call of like, yeah, there's gonna be some games where teams aren't gonna have the firepower that Texas has, but you can't let up, and you can't just, oh, we got this in the bag. It's halftime, you still got another second half to play. Hopefully that at least benefits them moving forward.
Yeah, and one big thing I want to mention is this team needs to get a one seed. So they cannot mess around and lose many games down the stretch. I think they have room to lose maybe once or twice. That's it. That's it.
Yeah.
Maybe once or twice. That is the absolute max.
I don't think twice even. I think they get maybe once.
Okay.
I'd have to look
if they win the Big 12 tournament. You think they can only lose once?
Man, I'd have to look at the rest of women's basketball. But if they suddenly lose a couple games in this final stretch, then you're looking at them differently than just a team that lost a couple games. You're looking at a team that lost a couple games here recently that looked, prior to that, pretty much unbeatable. So, I don't know. Maybe they'd still be so far ahead as the number one currently that they'd get that love to still be a top seed. But, yeah, you lose a couple, I think you're making it making it dicey on yourself.
Right, so they need to figure out a way to not lose any. Yeah. Because they need to get into the best region, basically the region of their choice, essentially, whatever basically, the closest is.
Basically not the reason that was on the mock, or not to the bracket that was on the mock draft this week right. that clearly Kim Mulkey was not a fan of, nor really anyone involved with Baylor women's basketball was a fan of.
Yeah, exactly. And so hopefully they can keep it going and kind of ride this momentum, because, you know, a couple early-ish exits the past few years are not what Kim Mulkey is expecting, and you know she expects highly of this team, and so for them to do that, I do think they want to get a one seed and need to get a one seed. That seems to make everything significantly easier, especially in women's basketball.
Yeah, no doubt. So the Lady Bears just continue on doing their thing, being dominant, being the number one team in the country, and being number one in the Big 12 and having a nice little lead there over the Longhorns. Baylor men's basketball meanwhile snap the losing streak. Not that it was a long, not even maybe streak worthy, just a little skid, but could have the potential to go on another one if they're not careful. A couple of really big road games coming up for them over the next few days. And then there is Baylor baseball, which gets underway this weekend, and they kick things off with four games against Holy Cross. They will play their first game of the season. This is a top 25 ranked Bears team, top 15, depending on where you look. Big 12 favorite, depending on pretty much everywhere you look. And if they're not the favorite, then they're co-favorites or favorite right behind the favorite of Texas Tech. But they're getting a lot of love preseason because of the roster they have coming back. So it'll be Holy Cross to kick things off Friday evening. Then they'll have a doubleheader on Saturday with a 1 o'clock and 4 o'clock start times. And then a finale on Sunday at around noon with Holy Cross. So, you know, four games in 3 days, same opponent. It is the beginning of baseball season for this Steve Rodriguez-led bunch. And like I said, man, there's just a whole lot of expectations for this team, and I think a lot of people excited about what they could potentially do.
Yeah, and when you return, you know, the top two lineup in the Big 12, you're going to have high expectations when everyone in that lineup returns in that batting order. And then you also turn right around and all three of your starters return as well. And so they have some talent returning. And when you have that talent returning, you're going to be ranked highly and you're going to have a lot of expectations. And I think this team has expectations for themselves as well. Much like we talked about the women's basketball team having that expectation to win national championships, this team just feels very different. They feel like a team that is confident in what they have and what they're bringing back, and they have so many really, really good baseball players. This is going to be a fun year, I think, and one thing I want to mention is I think these first four games, and really for a lot of their non-conference, they're going to get a chance to develop the bullpen, which is kind of going to be their biggest question mark coming into this year, because they lose four seniors that were great last year for this team. And so I think you're going to see a lot of different rotations. I think you're going to see a lot of young pitchers get opportunities, a lot of young hitters get opportunities too. And so with the weaker schedule, it provides chances for them to kind of perfect their lineup a little bit, and I'm very interested to see how they go about doing that. But yeah, the one thing I do want to mention, Baylor, you know, does not have a lot of room for error. They don't have a lot of room for a lot of losses because their non-conference is really, really soft this year.
Yeah, four games against Holy Cross to kick things off. They'll have a Tuesday night game against Texas State next week. Then they will have three games at home against Cornell next weekend. Tuesday night game against Dallas Baptist, also at home. That will be on Fox Sports Southwest Plus. Then you got the Shriners Classic, where you will see some very good competition, and A&M Rice, Texas State. Come back, UT Arlington. You got a road trip to Nebraska. You got Cal Poly, ACU, Sam Houston State, and then it's Big 12 play. So, yeah, not a lot of big bangers on this year's schedule, which should work out in their favor. But as you said, there's not a lot of wiggle room. If you do reach a stretch where you're struggling, it's going to be hard to really justify too many losses when you haven't played too many teams that you're expected to lose to.
Exactly, and this is a team that needs to host a regional. You know, they want to make it to a College World Series. The easiest way to do that is, of course, if you're hosting your own regional, getting a one seed and possibly a national seed. I think that's definitely on the table for this team. And I do think that they are going to be one of the two best teams in the Big 12, along with Texas Tech. That's just my thoughts on this year. I just think that a lot of the other teams have a lot to prove, whereas Baylor already has that proven talent, and you kind of already know what you're going to get from a lot of the guys on this team.
Yeah, it's not often where the stars align to where you have, you know, a Shea Langeliers back for his junior season in addition to every other position player all at the same time. It just seems like it's kind of like, you know, looking at Baylor football, is everything you start to look at next year looks so great, and all of a sudden, you know, you got Pooh Strickland leaving, and then you got, you know, there's always like some little catch to where you're not quite at full strength all at the same time, although Baylor football could be that way maybe in 2020, but this baseball team's about as solid as you're going to get just as far as returning guys and everybody being back. So, yeah, that's exciting. That gets kicked off this weekend with, again, four games against Holy Cross, one on Friday, two on Saturday, one on Sunday. So best of luck to Steve Rodriguez and the guys on what should be a pretty banner year. And I know it definitely makes a difference around here in the springtime when baseball's good and they're in contention, because folks love to go out to the ball games, love to see good baseball. And, man, it made a world of difference last year. I know that. Just the way the football season had gone, you had the Lady Bears losing again in the Sweet 16. Baylor men, kind of, you know, quick exit. So there wasn't – it went from, like – fall, the start of fall, like new coach and new program, and like, oh, let's get to spring sports, and the spring sports roll around, and the hoops is a bit disappointing just in terms of where they finished, but baseball, not expected to do maybe a ton last year, actually well exceeded expectations and made things very exciting. So hopefully they can do that again this spring, and it'll be just more in line with the success that the other sports did have this time around. You want to get us some mailbag questions?
Let's do it. Yeah, let's
all right. Go right into it. We will get into some mailbag questions here. Of course, we've got the thread that Grayson's been typically putting up each week. You can always chime in with your questions. But let's start off with Alpha Needle, who asks, can you confirm that Joe Waco has moved to Frisco? And no, I cannot confirm nor deny that Joe Waco has moved to Frisco. Rule Whip, with Freddie Gillespie having one more year as a Bear, where do you see him finishing in relation to some of the great Baylor big men in recent history? His development, even from game one this year to now, has been really incredible and fun to watch.
I really like Freddie, but I don't think that he has the kind of ceiling to get into the conversation with a Jonathan Motley or a Perry Jones or a Quincy AC, guys like that. I don't think he's quite at their level. That's just my perspective on it. But on the defensive side, he's definitely going to be a very big part of this team next year. He can protect the rim probably better than anyone that they have on the roster. And so that's one area where I can see him really having a big impact. But on the offensive side, I don't think he's one that you're going to feed and, you know, ask to go score a
bunch
of points.
Take over the
game. Yeah, exactly. Like they did at times with Ekpe Udo, and they did with Jonathan Motley, who basically, you know, put a team on his back and went all the way to the number one team in the nation at one point. I don't think he's that kind of player in my mind, but on the defensive end, we've seen it time and time again. He protects the rim extremely well and can make things difficult for opposing teams.
So, Rule Whip, appreciate your question there. BU23, love the podcast that I throw in a few cues this week. Biggest takeaway from the roster update this week, speaking of football, obviously. For me, it was Pooh. Even though we had kind of heard word that he could be debating on his future, to see that, you know, officially out there, that was surprising. And I didn't know enough of the weights off the top of my head to really be able to go, like, oh, he gained 20 or he gained 15. I wasn't able to notice that as much, but even though this isn't the roster, I mean, I'll say a takeaway that I've seen just in terms of the team is some of those graphics and stuff that we've seen and some of the differences in guys' muscular muscle tone and build, like I was mentioning earlier with Blake Lynch. But I don't know, for you, did you have a big takeaway from the roster reveal?
Yeah, so I had a few, and a couple were just kind of the weights. I mean, the weights are the first place I go. Connor Galvin, I mean, he's a legit, he's 6'7", 296 pounds, and he came in at 279. So he's put on a ton of weight. And to see, I mean, it's basically just looking at these numbers and seeing all the 300-pounders. I mean, Casey Phillips, 300 pounds already after 1 year on campus. Jackson Kimball, he's 300 pounds now. He's, you know, probably going to be one of the future centers for the Bears. That's great to see. Khalil Keith, 307. Seeing a guy like Giancarlo Valentine lose 10 pounds, 8 pounds, that's great. Mm-hmm. That just tells me, you know, he's getting into shape. And and things like that. I love seeing that out of the offensive line. Now, flipping over the defensive side, it's pretty much the same thing. When you see a guy like Chidi up to 286, you can see that his development is finally, you know, coming through, and he might be a guy that is poised to have a big season. And so that one stuck out to me. Clay Johnston getting all the way up to 232, that stood out to me. Yeah, that, I mean, if he keeps his speed and his athleticism at 232 pounds, he's going to be a problem. And then Ashton Logan, 232 pounds as well. So clearly they're putting an emphasis on getting those linebackers a little bit bigger, a little bit thicker, to hold up probably better throughout the season, I would think. And so those were some of the main ones that stood out to me. I don't see him listed, but I do. Josh Landry was the other one. He put on 15 pounds this offseason, and he's listed at defensive end, and I think he could be a guy, especially in a 3-4 defense, that could get a lot of playing time this next year. And he's a guy that I'm expecting big things from this spring and next year, as they're going to need some guys to step up on that defensive line, and I think he's one that you can definitely point at along with Chidi.
So it's good to see that these guys are getting molded into the ideal body type and weight, and certainly that'll pay off the longer time goes by. BU23 followed up with freshmen getting to 4 games this year, and who doesn't redshirt? And I think we addressed this maybe a couple of podcasts ago. Did something very, very similar to this, but just kind of riffing. I mean, I expect pretty much everybody's going to play 4 games as long as they're physically able to do so. I could see, you know, a Jacob Zeno maybe not getting into 4 games because they don't have a lot of opportunities to have a backup quarterback in the game, as we saw last year. But Jalen McClendon will no longer be here, so that leaves him and Gary. And if he outperforms Gary, then maybe he will see time in 4 games and then not play any longer. But I think pretty much Jalen Ellis obviously is dinged up, or whatever the extent of his injury is, probably not going to play next year just based on what we kind of feel like we know. But other than that, I mean, name a guy probably going to play next year in 1, 2, 3, 4 games, but still redshirt. So as far as that answer goes, pretty much everybody is going to play in at least 4 games.
Yeah, and I could definitely see that. I mean, there's an extent for everything. Sure. You're going to see guys playing special teams, so maybe not necessarily in their position, but I think you'll see a lot of these guys get on the field. You know, maybe Zeno ends up redshirting. I could see a guy like Sam Snyder maybe not getting a ton of run just because the tight end position is so loaded.
I mean, we saw who redshirted a tight end this year? Ben Sims. I mean, he redshirted the entire time. So
right. So maybe you'll see something like that, and hopefully the offensive linemen don't have to play this year outside of Blake Bettier. Hopefully Dyval and PMP can both take a full redshirt and don't have to be thrown into mini games. That would be nice. Defensive line, I think they're all going to have to come in at some point and, you know, show what they can do at least a little bit, to see if they have anything there. So, I'm with you. I mean, all the defensive guys, you're going to see a lot of them on special teams for 4 games, I would think. Much like a BJ Hanspard and a Mark Milton did last year. They played in, I believe, 3 or 4 games. And so, yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking for that.
I'll throw an interesting name at you, because the defensive guys, I mean, you can get them out there on special teams, and you can get offensive guys out there on special teams as well. But Quaylen Jones, I don't see a way for him to get on the field with the running back situation the way that it currently is. So it'd be intriguing to see if they perhaps put him on special teams a little bit, or if there's ever a position change in his future as well. I know there's been some, you know, debate about that, but he's one that I do, going over this, is go, okay, maybe not. Maybe he doesn't see 4 games of action just because of the depth. And then Ellis, we mentioned. Zeno, we mentioned. Although it's possible he could. I mean, it's very well I mean, they're going to have at some point start grooming the next guy. Charlie's a junior next year. So while you're not going to get anybody a ton of reps, you do have to start grooming and getting some reps for whoever you believe that next guy is going to be. And it very well could be Jacob. But, yeah, it's hard to not see Garmin Randolph out there in at least a couple of games. Yusuf Terry, I think he's got to play a little bit just because, you know, you are going to lose a lot wide receiver-wise next year. So it's not even just about this year, but also next year. So a good number of those guys to kind of answer your question. about getting into four games and also redshirt. And you'll see a good, you'll still see a good number of redshirts, though. I mean, we saw, what, over half the class, I believe, or about half the class this year still redshirted outright. So I would imagine it'll be something along those lines next year.
Right. And as far as guys that don't redshirt at all, I think that is pretty much reserved at this point from what we can tell for Bettier, Zuzua. I think those are two that are definitely going to play. I am still going to stand by. I do think that Peyton Powell finds his way on the field for the whole year, not at quarterback, but I just think that if he, I don't know, I just think that we could possibly be seeing a Kalen Barnes type situation with him. I think he is that kind of athlete that could do that if he's willing to make that move. If not, it'll be a little bit harder because the wide receiver position is so loaded for Baylor, but those are really the only ones I can think of. You know, if something happened to Charlie, then of course maybe Zeno doesn't redshirt. Garmin Randolph is another that he might have to play. Mm-hmm. He might have to, you know, not redshirt. And a surprise name that maybe doesn't redshirt is maybe someone like Will Williams. Maybe he comes in and pushes one of the starters and has to play and is in the two deep and they just need him out there, you know, for enough reps. So those are kind of the guys that I'm thinking maybe don't redshirt. Everyone else I am hoping redshirts unless they really take a big step their first year on campus.
Yeah, except for Noah Rauschenberg. He'll start every game.
Oh, right. Yeah. Him too. Yeah.
No, yeah, I would think that he will be seeing a redshirt. All the O-linemen except for Bettier. So, yeah, hopefully that answers your question. There'll be a lot of guys that see time, but not a lot of guys that actually see more than one, two, three, or four games. So we do appreciate you. BU23, final question from BU or couple questions from BU23. One player from offense and defense that has a breakout year. Who did we say? We had a similar question to that, I think. And I don't even remember who I said. I think I said – nope, I don't recall who I said.
Well, on offense, I'm going to go ahead and go with Squirrel. Okay. I think Craig Williams has a little bit of a breakout year. That position is very loaded, but I think he's too good of an athlete to not find his way into a couple touches is what I would think a game. And who knows what he can do with those touches. I mean, we saw him in that Kansas State game really make the most of them. And I'm really hoping that Baylor can blow out those first three opponents so we can really see these young guys get meaning, you know, get some reps and see what they can do. But he's one that I think will play in every game next year. And I think he'll be an integral part of the offense. So he's my breakout guy on offense. What do you think?
Well, depending on how you define breakout, I'm going to say Tyquan Thornton. Even though he kind of technically broke out a little bit last year, I think there was still a lot of scores he left on the table, whether his hands or bad throws. But it was a little bit of both at times. So I'm going to say Tyquan takes that next step to being one of the better Big 12 receivers here in a couple of years. And I did not notice, was there any weight difference with him on the spring updated roster? I normally would have thought to look at him first, but right, I didn't even pay attention
especially to it. Since you and I both said
he's playing as a freshman. He's too skinny. There's no way. And yet there he was.
No, nothing. I don't see it on him yet. Okay. But
I would imagine he's got to have gained some weight. So that'll be interesting to see what he eventually ends up at. And what he could ultimately end up at is frightening how good and scary and strong he could be and fast. So I'll go Tyquan Thornton, take another step up next year, and eventually being like the number one guy in this wide receiving core, I think, his junior and senior years, quite possibly. From defense, who would you go with?
Ooh, I'm going to go with more of kind of, you know, one of those surprise ones, because obviously, you know, a Kalen Barnes is one that comes to mind, but I'm going to go with kind of more of a position of need. And so I'm actually going to go with Chidi. I think that he is going to make a huge just take huge strides this year, and he's going to be asked to do a ton. I mean, he's going to be in the two deep. Mm-hmm. He's going to be a guy that's going to have to come in for Bravion a lot. We've seen the way that they like to rotate in and out defensive players, and he's gonna have to play a ton. And that 286 pound weight, that's big time. He's going to be a guy that will get some reps, and I'm excited to see him. And Josh Landry would be the third guy that I think could also have a chance to be a breakout guy for Baylor next year.
Yeah, I'm going Kalen Barnes. I just think that much like Tyquan at wide receiver, Kalen's going to play himself into being one of the better corners in the league his junior and senior seasons. I think now that he's kind of settled into his role, after, you know, kind of wondering what else he was going to do, how often he was going to play last year. Well, he played a lot, and then by the end of the year, I mean, he was a de facto starting corner in many ways, right? So I think he's going to be a big part of what they do, especially with his size. You know, you're losing a guy like a Derek Thomas, and I know Jameson Houston has good size, but he's awfully streaky at times and not always healthy at times. So I think Kalen's just like the prototypical guy that they're looking for, and I'd expect him to have another big jump up next year. So there's breakout. And then spring position battles, you're most excited to follow, Grayson.
Well, I just wanted to mention one thing. I found Tyquan Thornton's weight, and he's up to a whopping 168 pounds. So he is probably still running around out there running 4.3s all day in practice. But yeah, he's so not a ton of weight, not a ton of weight put on from last year's depth chart. But as far as
if he could ever get to 185, holy cow. Oh my, he would be such a freak.
Yeah, absolutely would be. As far as position battles, you know, I'm really curious to see what happens at the safety position. As far as does a freshman come in and push for playing time? Does Christian Morgan wrap the roll up? Just JT Woods wrap the roll up? Who's going to play opposite Chris Miller? I think we kind of know Chris Miller is going to be the guy, but who's going to be the other dude? Is it Henry Black? Could he be a guy that steps up? There's just a lot of question marks at that other spot. And frankly, I mean, even Chris Miller has some question marks from last year as well. So that's a position that I would not put any money on who I think is going to start opening day. I just think that it's just going to be very interesting to see. Christian Morgan is obviously a freak as far as an athlete, but can he take that step to being a true safety in 1 year? Is JT Woods playmaking? Is he going to make a stride? I think that's one that I'm really looking at.
Going back to the question we had about the redshirting and all of that, one area, the safeties, when you're looking at Hakeem Vance and Solomon Turner and some of those guys, I mean, I know we just said that pretty much anybody who can physically play is probably going to play in four games or under, but most of the class will likely redshirt. But at safety, that's the one spot where I could see somebody walking in and perhaps, if they impress, obviously, could see a good amount of time, more than four games, maybe even a starting spot by the end of the year. I know there's high hopes for JT Woods and Christian Morgan, but you know, this is also not a roster that just they settle on two guys and those are the starters and nobody else plays. You get a lot of opportunities. So safety's a spot I definitely wonder if there's not a young guy who can crack that pretty much right away.
Yeah, and unlike, you know, the cornerback position, I think you and I both feel pretty comfortable with the depth they have there, I would say. The two deep is pretty good. You got a lot of young guys coming up, but the two deep's pretty locked in. Linebacker, you have your starters locked in. Don't really know who's going to be the guys behind them that will step up. Will an Ashton Logan step up? Will, you know, Jacob Copeland, does he take that step? So curious about that position. But the safety and then this next position that I'm going to get to, the defensive line, those two positions, I am just kind of going to sit back and watch it develop because I think we have an idea of who the starting, you know, three or four will be. But man, after that, you just have no idea. And we know they love to rotate guys in. So you need, you know, about 10 bodies, I would say, that you feel comfortable about to play the kind of defense that they want to play. And I just don't know who the 10 are.
So to answer your question, all of the defense, basically all of the defense, because I was going to say the back seven, you know, Clay's great, but I mean, that's one sure thing in an entire unit with three starting positions. And I know there's others to be optimistic about, but there's a lot of room for growth at linebacker. There's a lot of room for growth at safety. And then that D-line as well. Like, how much depth do you really have? How much quality depth do you really have? So, I mean, position battles on the defensive side, I think, are going to be all across the board. I think the kicking battle is going to be actually really competitive because they're going to have like three or four guys that are all going to be competing for kicks. So if your special teams is your thing or just, you know, being a Baylor fan and watching the kicking over the years, I mean, that's obviously a very important position. So I think there's going to be a battle there. But the most intriguing is just basically the entire defense. Offensively, other than the O-line, obviously you're filling, what, three spots, guys who have departed. and there will be a rotation of sorts there as well. You have an idea of at least the key pieces and who's most likely to be in certain spots. Whereas I think defensively, you have some of that idea at certain places and then a whole lot of unknown in various other places as well. And then besides that, offensively, I mean, I know they'll have a lot of competition with the receivers, and Jackson Gleason will want to see the field this year along with the other young guys, but it's all kind of known. I mean, it's going to be Charlie. It's going to be the three guys at running back. It's going to be Tyquan and guys at wide receiver, Chris Platt, Denzel Mims. So tight end, it's going to be all these young guys. Just in Christoph Henley's case, as a sophomore, with everybody else pretty much at sophomores or redshirt freshmen or true freshmen. Braylon Taylor, to wide receiver, will be interesting. What he can do over there, that'd be the one kind of variable with the wide receiving group. But, yeah, appreciate all the questions, BU23. You want to go ahead and rip this one?
ZT Smith, can we compete for a Big 12 championship this year?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think that anybody's just knock your doors off pretty right now. I know that Texas has a lot of hype and a lot of returning players. They've also got a lot of guys who are leaving as well. I think that they're going to be pretty good. I think Oklahoma will find a way to be pretty good, again, no matter who their quarterback is. But they should be a little less than they have been over the last 2 years with Heisman winners. Texas Tech, whatever. TCU, I mean, whatever. Although they'll be better. But, I mean, there's nobody that I go, like, that's the definite favorite in the Big 12 this year. If Texas wasn't named Texas, they were named West Virginia instead, they'd probably still be getting preseason favorite love, but not as much as they are getting because they are Texas. So I don't think they're just going to run away with the conference. And I think it's going to be a battle with whoever wants to be in a battle. And Baylor is certainly going to be a team that wants to be in that and will have an opportunity to do so. So, yeah, I think they can compete for one next year.
Yeah, the only team, in my opinion, that they're sitting, you know, a little bit behind, and it's really just because you have to beat the champ to be the champ. And so right now, OU is the team.
And they've whooped you most recently. Yeah,
they're the team. They're the team. And then Texas obviously has a lot of hype. But see, my thing about Texas is they haven't won it. They haven't won it. And so if you haven't won it, I think everyone's just sitting there kind of in those, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 spots, which I think personally are, you know, Texas, Baylor, Iowa State, TCU, maybe Oklahoma State. Those spots right there, I think, are all kind of up for grabs. So I could see Baylor finishing in the top two and getting a chance to go to the Big 12 championship and compete for that. It's possible.
It'd be crazy, but yeah, it's possible.
It would be insane, but I don't think it is too crazy to think of. And yes, the fact that they get Oklahoma at home and they're trying to, you know, develop a new quarterback, I still think Oklahoma's going to be very good. But if you get them at home, there's a chance. I mean, the year Baylor went 1-11, they gave OU all they wanted at McLean Stadium. So there's definitely opportunities there. I would not call it at this point, but I think that they have a great chance to finish in the top 3 or 4 in the conference. And if you're that close in the race, you definitely have a chance to win the Big 12.
Yep, agreed on that. So part two of ZT Smith and his post.
Oh, you want? Okay, so think we hang on to Crawford from the 2020 class with all the interest he's getting.
Don't you love the year away from signing day? And no, this is not a shot at you at all, ZT Smith, at all. It's just, this is like, I've lived this for 20 years following recruiting. It's just funny how the page just flips and it's like, bam, right onto the next one. It's going to be difficult. It's going to be extremely, extremely difficult because he is getting a lot of love from a lot of different places. He doesn't seem like a young man that is just, you know, locked in, dead set, dream school is where I've always wanted to go. I'm shutting it down. Like, that's not going to happen. He's clearly, as we've seen, if you follow him on social media, going to take lots of visits, whether that be to Arkansas or to Texas, and all those programs are in on him. So I think he's going to be a guy pulled in a lot of different directions with a lot of different voices from a lot of different angles, and this is going to be a recruiting battle for this staff to try and win, just try to keep him locked in and then just keep him the rest of the way. But it's going to be tough, no doubt about that.
Yeah, and I think that right now I can't predict that Baylor's going to hang on to him, but one thing that is in Baylor's favor is that, you know, he is the first guy in the class, and he's probably one of only maybe 2 or 3 offensive linemen they're going to take in this class as well. So probably 3 is what I would guess. So there's not going to be a lot of, you know, oh, they want 5 guys and he's just one of the 5 guys. No, he's a priority type guy for them. And He's already been on campus for during the spring. He was wearing green sweatpants at the basketball game. So I think and a Baylor shirt, Baylor hat. So he definitely likes Baylor a ton. But, yeah, I mean, we're going to post a ton of stuff he posts on Twitter of him taking visits, wearing different uniforms, and going and doing his thing. And that's just the way recruiting is. And that's the way it's going to be. And so it's going to take some time to really know which way he's leaning. Right now, he's a Baylor commit. But yeah, I mean, as the bigger offers start coming, that's when things can change a little bit.
Yep, no doubt. And plus, you know, I'm just thinking, I remember seeing a graphic of him at Texas one weekend. He's got Keontae Ingram, old high school teammate that's there. And so he's going to have a lot of former teammates at former places pulling him this way and that. So it'd just be a really tough recruiting job for this staff. But, hey, I think we all realize that they're probably up for that challenge. So I do appreciate the question. Stifler's mom, hypothetical, if Rule taking the Jets job, was Joey McGuire going to get real consideration for the head coaching job? Would he be the leading candidate in the next year or two if Rule leaves? I believe that Joey would have gotten some consideration. I don't know if it would have been a ton in comparison to maybe other candidates that they would potentially have gone after. I think Joey McGuire is definitely bound to be a head coach of the college football ranks sooner rather than later. Is it in the next year or so? I don't know about all that. Could it be at Baylor one day? I definitely think there's a strong possibility that that could happen. But to answer your question, would he get consideration for the head coaching job at Rule left? Yeah, I definitely think he'd gotten a ton of it. Would he be the leading candidate in the next year or two? I think it depends on how this next season goes. And if there's more progress, then I think it'd be really hard to not look at him and go, like, you're as close as we're going to get to what we already have, and you've also got some pretty good reputation yourself. I think he'd be a strong, strong candidate. The only thing is I don't know who else Mac Rhodes knows or has an eye on. We had no idea about him and Matt Rhule, for example. We were looking everywhere but Matt Rhule at Temple. So there could be a guy like that out there that we don't know about that Mac Rhodes is keeping tabs on. And also just the fact that Joey's, you know, still be relatively young to college, because even in a year or two, that's still, what, 3-4 years in the college ranks? So is that enough to make you feel okay with handing in the keys entirely? If it is, then by all means. But there's at least that question mark for me that he doesn't have a ton of experience just yet, even though he has a ton in the high school ranks.
Yeah, I think he would have gotten consideration, but I'm kind of with you. He hasn't had a ton of experience at the college level yet. He hasn't even been an offense coordinator, defense coordinator, right, which is not something that you typically see. But one thing I will mention is I remember, you know, Temple was going through their coaching search, and Coach Rhule obviously really wanted Fran Brown to get that coaching job or for it to at least stay in his tree of coaches. And so, you know, Jeff Collins became the coach when Rhule left. He was in his coaching tree. Collins went to Georgia Tech, and then it was thought that, you know, maybe they'd keep that in Coach Rhule's coaching tree, and that didn't end up happening. But my point of that is I think that Rhule would want it to come from in his coaching tree, and he'd want it to kind of build, and he's proven that, you know, what they've done works and the culture that they've instilled works. Then I don't see any reason why Coach McGuire couldn't take that role and be very good at it. Because once you have that culture instilled in your program, I'm not going to say it doesn't matter who your head coach is, but I'll say it definitely makes the transition easier to just hire from within and continue to build upon that. As long as a lot of, you know, the assistants were to stay, I think that, yeah, Joey would absolutely be in consideration the next year or two if Rhule leaves.
Yeah, and he even said in his interview last week on ESPN Central Texas that he's learned a ton about, like, recruiting. And, like, that's the other part you got to think about. Like, X and O's wise, he may be right now ready to coach a college football team, but it's all the other stuff. It's the handling of visits and recruiting boards and all these other things. He's still learning all of that, as are all the other assistants, probably everybody but Phil Snow, quite frankly. I think Matt Rhule's still learning stuff constantly. So it takes time, but consideration for sure. Leading, not ready to say that just yet. And do you want to handle this last one here?
Sikkim, Kentucky, do you ever find yourself daydreaming about the development of our offense? I can't stop thinking about the explosiveness of our offense during the Texas Bowl and what we might be able to do to teams next year.
No, because Jeff Nixon sucks. Get somebody else's offensive coordinator. He stinks. Yeah, no, I don't know about daydreaming so much, but yeah, I've definitely given some thought to the potential that this offense has. I mean, really, it's just going to boil down to the O-line, and that's what I've told people for a couple years now, is like, until that O-line is right, we have no idea what this offense looks like. And the couple of times that we've seen them actually block really well, what do we all walk away saying? Like, man, Jeff Nixon called a good game, didn't he? he stinks when they can't block anybody. Of course he does. Not that he's going to call a perfect game every time either, but that had a lot to do with people's frustrations. And then all of a sudden you see that blocking, it's like, whoa, who ripped the top off this bad boy? Look at all these weapons that we have. So, yeah, I do think about the potential, but I always get somewhat grounded with the thought of, all right, but if that O-line's not that much better, then it's all for naught. So thinking in year three they'll be much improved, yeah, I'm definitely excited about what this offense could potentially do. And I love the game that he called in the Texas Bowl, although that was a great game for both offensive coordinators apparently.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. We've seen what he can do when the offensive line plays a good game. We saw
he can run
the
football.
Right, right. Right, and that's kind of what opens up everything. And Coach Nixon wants to run the football. It's clear that he wants to run it, and that establishes kind of everything else in this offense. And so in the Texas Bowl, the offensive line had a great game against Kansas State and Oklahoma State. The offensive line had a great game against TCU and against Texas. The offensive line had a really bad game, and so it made
West Virginia
was another one where you just couldn't block at all. Mm-hmm. And there was no run game. You forced your quarterback into very tough situations, and that does not end well very often. So yeah, I do find myself daydreaming about the possibility that maybe they come out and hang, you know, 35 points a game on teams, and that's possible. And in order for that to happen, they need to start with hanging 50 on Stephen F. Austin in the first game of the year. So I do see it. I see the strides. I see the athletes on the field. And so, yeah, I definitely think about it. They have a lot of really talented guys, and I think we're finally starting to see that more and more as the blocking gets better and better.
Yeah, the blocking is where it's at. I think also some things that could take it to the next level is the tight end play. Just having more consistency, more depth there as well. And if Denzel Mims were to ever just get rid of those self-doubts and go out and play like he's capable of playing, but do so on a weekly basis, not disappear halfway through a game after getting a couple of first-quarter catches or things like that, then, I mean, you talk about taking it to another level. I mean, he's got the ability to be really special. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot to be excited about. Have to see how the O-line does, but other than that, man, I like what Jeff Nixon can do, and that Texas Bowl was just such a joy to watch him kind of pick apart that defense.
And you know what else makes the offense look more explosive? When you create turnovers and you give your offense a short field and you're able to score quickly, that always helps, and Baylor has not been very good at forcing turnovers, so I think that would be another way that would maybe look like the offense is taking another step as well.
Yeah, and I will throw in there, before we close it out here, another thing that they did in the Texas Bowl that they had not been very good at, that was actually break tackles and go on big burst plays, whereas we see Treston Ebner get tripped up after 15 yards and there's nothing but green in front of him, or Jamichael Hasty fall down after 10 when there's nothing but green in front of him, even though he did that in the Texas Bowl too. But we did finally see, you know, a Lovett or an Ebner and those guys starting to break away a little bit. So the more that they can get those big explosive plays that have been missing for the last couple years, I mean, that's just going to add another dimension as well. And so it was good to see some progress in that regard.
Yeah, no doubt. Definitely great to see that. And we actually have one more question. Melody posted, when do you think certain Baylor fans will quit thinking that Rhule is leaving for the NFL next year or two? When will they actually notice that he said that he thinks this is an ideal job in university for him and that he wants to be here for a long time?
Well, that's never going to happen. I hate to say, it's just not. Until he's 75 years old and announcing his retirement as Baylor head football coach, people will still believe that at like 74 he's going to leave for the Patriots. That's just part of the gig. Oklahoma fans dealt with that with Bob Stoops for several years, that they thought every year that he was going to go take the Cowboys job or the Browns job or whatever. That's just what you get with certain coaches. That is one nice thing about having, you know, a Tom Herman or someone like that, is you know he's not going anywhere. I mean, Patriots ain't calling on Tom Herman or anybody like him. And any other big schools aren't going to do it either, because he's where he's going to be, you know, he's where he has everything. He has no reason to look outside anywhere else in the college ranks. So, you know, there's certain instances like that where there's no worry. But, I mean, look at Oklahoma right now with Lincoln Riley. They're never going to stop. I mean, they're probably feeling a lot more sure about Lincoln Riley being around for the next 10 years than Baylor fans are thinking about Matt Rhule being around for the next 10 years. But they are going to have their ups and downs with Lincoln Riley, no matter how many redone contracts he signs. And that's going to be the case with Matt Rhule. So that's just going to be an every year thing. And I don't know what to tell you other than that. That's just how it's going to be, unfortunately.
Yeah, especially with the way these NFL coaching hires are going. When a guy like Cliff Kingsbury is getting hired for a head coaching position in the NFL. Well,
Matt Campbell's getting a ton of love for
it. And he's going to continue.
Yeah, yeah, so, I mean, there's Riley, Campbell, and Rhule. And I bet fans in Ames have the same, and they haven't even experienced it nearly as close as Baylor fans have, of like, we know he's interviewing, and we know he's a favorite, and we know that, like, they've just known that he's had conversations. That'll heat up even more as well, as will Lincoln Riley, I'm sure, at some point. So, yeah.
Yeah, you're just going to have, I honestly think you're just going to have to get used to it, because he's going to interview for jobs. He's basically said that, just like he wants his players to basically go interview for jobs. That's just kind of the way it is, and I what I would say is just enjoy it for what it is right now, and don't overthink it too much by every, you know, offseason, you know, really sweating whether he leaves or not. Just kind of let it all play out, and know that Baylor does have, you know, kind of a coach in waiting type role right now, and so I wouldn't worry too much about it though. He's built the program up to a point where any new coach that does come in is going to be set up very nicely. And don't forget, this will be his third year here. So he's done a lot time. And now this year is just kind of an opportunity to build on it even more. But the position is definitely more wanted than it was when he got here. And so I think Baylor's in a great position, whether he leaves or not. Obviously, the ideal would be he stays forever.
But, yeah. Yeah, you'd love to have him around for a long time. It's probably not going to be the case, but by a long time, I'm saying like Bill Snyder. He's not going to be that guy necessarily, but who knows? I mean, if next year some of the jobs that open up are teams that don't really have an interest in Matt Rhule, then okay, there's another year. And then you just, there's no way of knowing. Be thankful that it wasn't the Jets this time around, because that got really close. Probably could have happened if he had given in a little bit, but also know that about him is that he didn't give in, even though there's this potential dream job sitting right there, that it would have to be the ideal scenario. It's not just going to be team A calls up, all right, I'm ready, later. I see that from people a lot, and it's like, if he wanted to leave so badly, he could have left last year, could have left multiple times this year, but he's here, so enjoy him while he's around, and yeah, just get used to it, but take it as flattery for your head coach up until the day he leaves, obviously, and then it'll be on to the next one. But when that happens, to your point, and we'll close it out here, they will be in a much better position than when they hired him. Hopefully the NCAA stuff's cleared out by the time, you know, he does eventually perhaps leave, and that would make it even more attractive of a job. So you, whether it's Joey McGuire or Evan Cooper or whoever else, a year, 5 years, 15 years from now, just enjoy what it is for the time being. And we're getting ready to enjoy spring number 3 with Matt Rhule, and some clearly raised expectations going into this version as opposed to last year's version of spring football. So appreciate all the questions this week. Appreciate you listening as well, Grayson. Appreciate you, man.
Always.
Another good conversation this week. We'll talk to you next week here on the Fast Friday Podcast on Sikkim365.com.